This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Holy Spirit, we say thank you for another day. We say thank you for another opportunity to try again. We thank you for another opportunity to breathe, to inhale, to think, to create, to love, to be embraced. Father, we thank you that you are spinning the winds of change. We thank you that the tides are changing. We thank you that we see light on the horizon. Father, we just really want to start out and say thank you that we don't have to deal with another 4 years of that Cheeto man. And we just really, 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 really from the bottom of our hearts say thank you. We thank you that you said faith without works is dead. And so we did our part and you showed up and we said thank you. And we thank you for everything that you're doing. We thank you for new vision, new perspective. We thank you that we have new eyes to see and create a beautiful and hopeful tomorrow. We say thank you. And we ask all of these things in your precious name, Yahusha. We pray. Amen and amen. All right, y'all. This segment is called Mo Knows, because you know I know a whole lot, right?
Mo Knows.
Now, listening to Kamala say, I may be the first, but I am not the last, I'm reminded of when I was a little boy watching the movie about Ruby Bridges and how she was the first, but not the last, little Black girl to be integrated into a school system that said, first of all, that we were dumb and that we could not learn. And then to second, be the first, but not the last to go on to create a legacy of Black educated. And if my mother would say it, edumacated Black women. It is just so powerful when you think of how this speaks volumes and how the words of the vixen from RuPaul's Drag Race, she says, if you don't see yourself represented, represent. And I think about how this is going to just transcend wave upon wave of little Black girls and girls of color to go, that can be me. Just like it did with Barack, just like it did when we saw our auntie, Miss Michelle. So in that same way, beloved, I would challenge you to be inspired, to be reinvigorated, to have that of refreshing, that time of refreshing. What is it? Acts 19, when the Spirit of God sends a spirit of refreshing. Very much that, girl. Just a wave of refreshing to just go, yes, I can, because it's about damn time. And we all know now, Joe Biden will be our 46th president. And our good Judy, our good auntie, our good sis, our good, we're so happy, girl. Just thank God. We just say thank you, Holy Spirit. And Kamala Harris will be our vice president. Kamala Harris's win makes so many firsts in the United States. The first female ever, the first Black, the first Asian American vice president elect. Why is this such a big deal? What allowed this to happen? With people like AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and Ayanna Pressley coming up in the ranks, all of this excellence, it's about damn time, okay? Because why? Their grandmothers, your fathers and mothers and generations before that fought for these rights, okay? And it's about damn time, all right? And they're doing a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous job. Can we give them a round of applause? Because it's about damn time. And also, talking about even more diversity, right? We have the first transgender state senator, our beautiful sister, Miss Sarah McBride. Come on, there is a new world, a whole new world, a dazzling place where you can be whatever you want to be, right? They, for so long, just can we go here for a moment? For so long, they tried to use our race, our gender, our orientation to deny us rights, to say that we were dumb, to say that we could not. And I love that in a world today, in 2020, our skin color does not hold us back. Our gender does not hold us back. Our orientation does not hold us back. Our sexual identities do not hold us back, even though we are still fighting for that part. We are moving forward, and it is beautiful because it is about damn time. Yes, God.
Breaking news, this Justin.
And here is some more good news for all of the Megan Thee Stallion fans. Now, y'all know that she has released her new album, Good News. Also, if we're talking about this album cover, I thought Good News was like a magazine. Did anybody else drop down in the comment section and let me know if you did? Anyway, she's releasing her album, and we're so excited that if you were like me during the summertime, you were doing all of the fun TikTok dances to Savage, performing WAP. And let's not forget that she has her latest single called Don't Stop, featuring Young Thug. Okay, it's real, real poppin', and she looks good. Can we talk about her body, honey? Can we talk about her body just shining like chocolate milk, honey? Now, we know that Megan Thee Stallion, our sister, was a victim of gun violence. She was allegedly shot. Allegedly, we can throw that alleged out. Because we know that this week, she just was in an article, I believe it was GQ, where she said, what? That raggedy little short Oompa Loompa tried to pay her off to keep her silent. And she said, hell no, thank you, sis. But let's stop talking about that troll and talk about more of her excellence, honey. Megan also penned an op-ed in the New York Times calling for the protection of Black women. Megan Thee Stallion is also giving out coins. This week, she's giving out two $10,000 scholarships to women in school to pursue their education because she's also a college student, okay? And I love that because, you know, just like so many of us who had great Black mothers, they said, look, honey, you can be a rapper in this house, but you also gonna go to college, okay? You can be a football player, but you gonna get, because if you break your leg, how you gonna pay the bills, okay? And I love that because we know that this music industry is shady and flaky. We know that you don't make no money unless you're on tour, girl, and we are in the house, okay? Watching her on TikTok. So she said, I'ma get my education. Lovely, girl. Better do it right, sis. So this part of the show, we're going to talk about a subject that I feel is near and dear to my heart. I feel that it is a very common thing and a lot of people don't recognize what's going on, but I want to talk about it. And that subject that I want to talk about is blackfishing. And if you're not familiar with the term blackfishing is a term that was created by a journalist named Juana Thompson. And she wanted to describe what she saw online of influencers deeply darkening their skin, girl, like severely shades darker, and then also changing their hair texture or using hair extensions that looked traditionally more Black or more like traditional Black hairstyles for the appearance to look Black or to look racially ambiguous. And the reason that I think it's near and dear to my heart is because I feel that for so long, let's just say it this way. We know that folks on the other side they love to hop on what's trending. Let's just even take it here. We saw that when voguing the first time made its resurgence to pop culture, we saw that the other side was into it. And then once they were done with it, they stopped going to the classes and participating in yacht, yacht, yacht. And I feel that right now, Blackness is having this resurgence and this awakening. However, because Blackness is trending and everyone wants to be melanated and so, you know, celebrate this Blackness and celebrate this skin and have their skin glowing and popping and yada, yada, yada. And we see the current trend of whiteness doing it again, where we see celebrities and influencers, and you know, y'all favorite celebrities, girl, we don't even have to call them out, but we are because we love them and we want to call them higher. You know, the Kardashians, girl, they love to just, you sis, wait a minute. Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I don't get it. We see it with y'all other little favorite, Miss Ariana Grande. We see it with the fabulous, you know, the young lady is actually kind of gorgeous, Miss Emma, how do you say her name? Emma Hallberg. Hallberg, she's the Swedish, or the Sweden Instagram star. You know, we just see it all over the place. We see it with different fashion houses where we have these big industries and they will take white and Latin and Native American and just anything that's other than Black or even a light-skinned Black person and put dark foundation on them to look like a caricature of a Black person. And it's just so like, why didn't you just call the dark-skinned girl? Like, why didn't you just give her that opportunity? Why? And I get the whole, you know, the whole, like, it's their art. No, sis, because the reality is there's a history, you know? There's no history of Black people putting on whiteness and, you know, and shaming white people, but there's a history of whiteness doing blackface, okay? We know that. I mean, we see it here in America. We saw it here in America, and we even have it happen in, Holland and Amsterdam, where they have St. Pete, who is like he started out as the white little helper that was covered in soot. And so that's why his face was black. However, artists who would draw him with black features and these red lips and this kinky curly hair. I also heard somebody say this, that sometimes they said, Monique, sometimes we got to give people a little grace for the fact that a lot of this younger generation, and specifically the white ones and the racially ambiguous ones who don't know the history, they want to, specifically the white ones, and we love you, but just, you know, just hear us out, where you want to be in this place of appreciation. And so your intent is to, you know, dress up and act like, you know, Keisha. However, when you do it, you don't recognize your impact and the weight that it carries, that it's not humor, and that you, when you are doing it, you are doing the caricature of Black women, and you are giving your portrayal of what you think Black women are, and how we have it constantly over and over and over and over again. It's just really, really like, no, like, we just need to stop it. You know, what also goes with Black fishing is the Black sin, and it's part of AAV, African American vernacular English, where we have influencers and social media digital content creators who have made their rise to fame doing Black sins, where it's the girl, white people and non-Black people love Blackness. They just hate it on Black people. I mean, if we can even jump back to that, you know, they talk about Ebonics, but the Ebonics and the show master, you show is right. You know what I mean? And the way that Black people have developed a language was because for the longest time, after you stripped us from our homes and you removed us from our cultures and removed our native tongues, we sound illiterate because you wouldn't let us read. You wouldn't let us be educated. You wouldn't let us advance. So I get it, you know, a part of because we are pop culture, honey. Black people are pop culture, okay? Like, now when we think of pop music, we think of whiteness like Taylor Swift and Britney Spears and da da da. But when we think of pop culture, honey, it is us. We just got to cut it out. And I believe that there is a place of appreciating and honoring and saying that this is beautiful and we love this. And I believe that we do that is not you necessarily going and doing it to appropriate or not recognizing the impact of you doing it, not just stopping there, but also pushing Blackness forward. So yeah, let us just do better, okay? When we recognize these things, let us recognize and call them out as, okay, when we see it, whether we're doing it ourselves or we see it in someone else, recognize that that is called, oh, that's blackfishing, okay? And I don't think that I'm honoring my Black brothers and sisters, you know, by that way. Because, you know, we are the world, we are one, you know what I mean? You know, we all want to be family, I mean, but I think we can honor our white brothers and sisters just like we honor our Black brothers and sisters, amen? So I don't think, you know, so let's start looking at it that way. If you look at us as family, you know what I mean? We all going to be one people because it's the human race, right? Uh-huh. Then let us honor one another. Let's be able to celebrate one another and celebrate everybody's uniqueness, okay? Because God made us uniquely different, but uniquely amazing, okay? And within our differentness, we are still very much alike. Okay, now we know that Roc Nation, you know, Jay-Z had that lovely whole controversy, girl, with the NFL. We was like, sis, what you doing, bruh? Like, what you out here doing? And he says that he wanted to own the entertainment side. so he could give more opportunities to brown folks. Okay, cute. So, you know, Roc Nation, I believe The Weeknd is signed to him. Now, The Weeknd is scheduled, and I'm going to say scheduled, scheduled to perform at the Super Bowl. Now, here we go. We know that The Weeknd is the modern day Keith Sweat. And if you know Keith Sweat, honey, many of y'all were born to Keith Sweat, okay? Your mamas and daddies was getting it all in slow motion style, honey, with the sweat dripping down, girl. That's what it was. So what is we supposed to the Super Bowl, bitch? I want a performance. I want a show, okay? We had Beyonce, who... Once she performed, honey, the power was knocked out of the building, okay? That is amazing, girl. Who has ever done such things? She says, I use all the electricity. Y'all can go home now, okay? Then we had Miss Lady Gaga. She jumped off of the skyscraper or something up there. It was real tall. She jumped down. We also had the beautiful J-Lo and Shakira with the whole little... Y'all saw her tongue thing? I think she was trying to let us know that she eats good cootie cat. If you got a cute cootie cat, I'm just saying. And the performance was powerful. J-Lo, which the world did not want to talk about how J-Lo had those children in cages, okay? No one really wanted to talk about that she was letting y'all hoes know, I see you. Okay, so this is what my question is. What is he going to do? I think he might have some sickening strippers. Let's describe what he might have. He might have some poles come out of the stage, girl, real hydraulic style. Because, you know, he looked like he crossed over. So he got some money now, girl, because his last album looked a little dark. So he got some coin now. So he's going to stripper poles come on out, hydraulic style, right? Then he's going to have the girls doing all of that, like, Magic City Atlanta, you know, stripper pole shit. You know, where they do the whole, like, straight body and they have somebody twerking upside down. That's what I feel is going to happen. And then somebody's probably going to get pregnant during the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think the show... What is he going to do? Somebody show me what he does in concert and then we might be like, okay, I don't know. Anyway, he's won 3 Grammys. Cute for him, bruh. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Bring me my flowers right now. He's been making music since about 2011 when he released his first mixtape, House of Balloons. And he's gone on to have 5 number ones, okay? The heels, I think that's when he had the little crunchy little dreadlocks that was like the little, this girl, if we could see, y'all can see me, I'm making a little quick, quick, quick. He had, that's when he had that hairstyle, right? Y'all remember, then he had, can't feel my face when I'm with you, right? He also had Starboy, I think that's when he crossed over, girl. That's when, he had that red cross, I got a little nervous. And then he had Heartless, right? And now his latest one. Now the song, I'm not gonna lie, the song is cute. You feel like you took up like a Molly and you coming on like the latter half of like you coming down off. That's what it feels like to me. And the music video, he like got beat up. That's what it looks like. And he's just like happy. Like they just stole all his money and he's just happy. Like, bitch, they just beat me up and I'm okay. Maybe he was thanking God that he was still alive. Praise God for that. Amen. Turn to your neighbor and say, The Weeknd is still alive. And he's also supposed to perform, y'all. So let's pray that it's a good show. Jay-Z has money because Beyonce is there. So they have a budget. We know they have a budget. So I think strippers are going to be in the mix. Actually, the white conservative people got a little uncomfortable when they saw J-Lo strippers. That they just mad that she's like 50 plus and can get on that pole and yacht, 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 girl. Now, if we're going to talk about favorite Super Bowl performances, first we have to start with the national anthem, which there's only one, Whitney Houston, okay? First, I've never seen someone sweat bullets standing in one spot lip syncing. But you thought she was singing that song from her uterus that day, bitch. You were like, this woman is singing, girl. And then you were butthurt when you heard she recorded the day after. And you like, bitch, I don't care. And the whole, bitch, you got to get that little, that lip trail, girl, that yah, 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 and your jaw, girl, that Whitney, girl. That's when you a good drag queen. Anyway, but not too much, okay? Not too much. Because if your jaw moving too much, then you did what she did, okay? That part. you see people chewing in the club, girl. You know what they are on that part. Girl, remember when we used to go to the club and we'd be like, girl, over there to your left, blue shirt, girl, not white, blue shirt. Yes, that one. Girl, she chewing. Girl, that's not bubble gum. That is not, girl, that is not double mint, bitch. Girl, But she's having a great night, so let's make sure she got some water. Girl, she's sweating. Let's bring her some water, girl. Let's make sure she stay hydrated. That's a good friend, bitch. If you're going to read a bitch secretly, just make sure you give the bitch a glass of water, bitch. Okay? Now, who was also my... did Janet Jackson do... Yes, she did when she had the titty pop out. Now, we know it was staged, girl. You make too much money. She was a Jackson. They don't have wardrobe malfunctions. No, ma'am. Anyway, also, can we talk about the shade? Justin went off to make a lovely career, and y'all shaded Miss Janet Jackson, the black woman, because y'all are trash, but it's fine. And then y'all praised Justin for... Never mind. Let me not read y'all hoes too much, okay? Not too much. Not too much. Justin Bruno Mars. No, not too much. Not too much. Thank you. Who else? I'm not gonna lie, Bruno Mars and Beyonce was cute. You know what I mean? Beyonce came back with the formation and the Michael Jackson homage. Lady Gaga's was cute. She did all of her best tracks. Very, very bad. I felt happy to be. I was never a monster because, well, she was a monster. I was in, you know, church and they were saying she was the Antichrist and I was nervous. And then when I saw Bad Romance Girl, I was like really afraid because she looked like a demon. You saw them vertebrae pop out. You was like, oh my God! And then you saw her next song, and that's how the devil gets your soul right there. Boom! Anyway! I'm learning pain. I'm learning pain. This segment in the show is where we like to spin the wheel to let us know what topics we're going to dive deep into. And if we don't get to your favorite topic today, there's always next week. On the wheel, we have self-love, let's ask a sex worker, politics, mental health, and last but not least, money management. And I'm going to say good money management. Okay. Now, let's take a look. Spin. Well, it looks like it's going to be politics today. You know what? There's a few things that I don't know. I'm a phone a friend. Let me call my good friend, Geraldo Cadava. You may know him from his contributions to the New York Times, the Washington Post, and most recently, The Daily Show. But he's also an associate professor of history and Latina and Latino studies at Northwestern University. He's the author of the book called Standing on Common Ground, and his most recent book, which I want to totally dive into, The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump.
Hey, Monique, what's up?
Okay, now, I want you just to explain just a little bit about your most recent book. The title is just like, oh, I want to know more. So tell us about your latest book.
Sure. So the book I just published in May is about the long relationship between Latinos, Hispanics, and the Republican Party. I call it Hispanic Republican instead of Latino Republican just because that's the word that most Latino conservatives prefer for themselves. And, you know, it really tells the history of this Latino Republican movement since the 1970s when Richard Nixon won re-election in 1972 with about a third of the Latino vote. And ever since then, about between a quarter and a third of Latinos have voted for the Republican candidate. And I think that remains a surprise to people.
Yes. And that, because... When Danielle, my producer, sent me the notes, I said, wait a minute. Oh, this is going to be good. Because my best friend is Colombian, and he tells me all the time, like, how so many Latinos vote, consistently vote Republican, and how, you know, now he is, he identifies as Latinx, you know, boom. So Latinx immigrant. And he goes, I don't understand knowing what most Latinos go to just to become an American. Like, how do you stand specifically with Trump? Because they were diehard his first term and this term. And it's just like, this man and the party to at least what's... Because we didn't know since 1970, so we didn't know that. So we would just assume, like, the party doesn't care. Well, we know they don't care for black and brown folks. So because y'all are brown, you know, like, how does... Yeah, go ahead.
these are big, important questions, and it's kind of what I tried to explain. But, you know, I think when it comes to issues of race and immigration, I think, first of all, Latino Republicans think that liberals are just overly obsessed with race. And then when it comes to immigration, They just point to the fact that Latinos have never been single voter issues. They've all single issue voters. They've always talked about.
Now, what does that mean?
What that means is that they
single
care.
Issue voters.
So what it means is that they don't go into a ballot box and only vote based on how a candidate feels about immigration or what a candidate's immigration policies are. So they routinely point to the fact that Latinos care much more about healthcare and education and the economy. And on those issues, there are conservative policies that they prefer more. So there are all kinds of ways of arguing against that idea. Mm-hmm. But that is what Latino Republicans say about themselves.
Because my friend, because my friend used to be a Republican because he's from Georgia. And so my friend was saying when he was, you know, in college, he was, you know, hung around. He was very conservative and Republican. And he says what it is for him when, you know, his upbringing was this whole thing of the shedding of the stigma of being the server, the cleaner, the this, that, and the third, and actually coming into America like the American dream of this chance for a new opportunity of life. And so the more conservative and the more ra-ta-ta-ta-ta I am, I get to shed the stigma of what it is to be a Latin or a Hispanic person, Latin person in America. So
that's so fascinating. I mean, I think that, you know, that impulse to want to shed your Latinx identity or any signs of your ethnic or racial identity, that doesn't necessarily lead to the embrace of conservative political positions, but I think it's one that many, many Latinas and Latinos feel. And there's this kind of dynamic where, you know, our parents, if they're immigrants, or our grandparents, if they were immigrants, they feel like they sacrificed so much to get here so that we could have better lives. And what that means when we get here is they want us to have, you know, all of the trappings of American success. And that means learning English and not speaking Spanish in public, those kinds of things. These are controversial ideas, by the way, within Latino communities. Like, I think a lot of Latinos who were raised speaking English precisely for these reasons, by the time they get to college, come to regret that they don't know anything about their family's homelands and don't know anything. They don't speak Spanish. So I think there's a real effort, you know, among college kids and older to try to reconnect with their cultures.
Heritage. Can I ask this question? Because I was very excited to...
You can ask anything you want. Go for it.
So my friend again, his mother says she has a problem with illegal immigrants who, you know, come to the country illegally. Now, we know that it is a very hard process because if it was easy, then I think they would do it instead of damn near trying to sacrifice their life trying to cross, you know, that desert, trying to, you know. Why is there the dissonance of, like, I guess an older generation going, I did it the right way and you did it the wrong way. However, the wrong way or whatever, you still see them trying to live the American dream as best as possible, like raise their kids. So the fact that there is a dissonance, like, how do they not see that though? Because a lot of times my friend will tell me, he goes, white people tell him, like, just go back to their country, da 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 da. And he goes, poverty in America is like walking down Beverly Hills compared to poverty back home. So with that dissonance and having family members who came from, you know, these countries, these Latin countries to come to America, why is there such a...
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting on so many things that are like at the core of Latino politics and communities and identity. And it's, you know, to what extent do we feel solidarity with Latin American immigrants? To what extent do we see ourselves as part of a community in general? I think one thing that's been so interesting to watch since the election happened is just there are all these like new debates about what it even means to be Hispanic and Latino, you know, I think precisely because many people saw Donald Trump actually expand his support among Latinos. So in a world where that's possible, I guess people feel like you have to ask what it even means to be Latina or Latino. And, you know, I think, yeah, what you said, I did it the right way. That's what my grandpa says all the time. He was Colombian, Panamanian, Filipino, and he became a citizen by joining the U.S. Air Force. And he did it the right way, you know, serving America. And I do think there's this idea that Latino immigrants, Latin American immigrants do kind of play out their American dream here. And part of their own ability to play out their own American dream, I think they probably feel depends on closing that opportunity to others, because not everyone can have it, you know? So it's a weird thing. I mean, it's a weird thing that happens. It's almost like this amnesia or forgetting about thinking about their own family's immigrant experience, yet it does happen. So it's a mystery to me as well sometimes.
You know, something that's me and my friend have a conversation all the time, and he says that there is a rise in the wave of Latin people who are very, they hate Black people because of, they feel that the Black issue is always talked about and the Latin, you know, the Latin issues aren't spoken about, like their struggles, their hardships, their pains. They, you know, they rarely see them even on the news, which is not a good thing to be like, honey, you're on the news. But the stories on the news, they never report, you know, what are happening in these communities. And so I wanted to ask you, why do you feel that that lack of representation or those stories haven't been shared? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, these are such good questions and they're not easy. You know, I teach a class at Northwestern on Latino history and I've done so for, you know, the 12 years that I've... Come on, let's go. Okay. I mean, I feel like if anything good comes out of this election, like it's every 4 years people rediscover like, oh, there's a whole bunch of Latinos and they vote mm-hmm. in different ways. It's amazing. Yeah. We have to go figure out what this is about. And to me, that just reveals a kind of, I don't know, almost a lack of interest in getting to know who we are.
Yes.
Because I feel like we can only keep explaining who we are and teaching our history mm-hmm. so much and confront this reality that people still don't understand what our history is and who we are and how long we've been here and what our struggles for justice and inclusion have been without people knowing that, you know, it gets tiring to explain it a lot. But, you know, but that's what, hey, I'm a teacher. That's what I do. I do it in the class. I'm going to be doing it for the rest of my career. So I'm used to it. But I think, you know, we know that during the civil rights era in the 60s and 70s, that was when there was a big push for inclusion in politics, not only by Latinos, but African Americans and others as well. And that inclusion got us some things. I mean, there were more Latinos, African Americans who held elected office in the 1970s, 1980s, and going forward. But I think that all of us feel like there's still this kind of ongoing struggle for inclusion and acknowledgement and respect and yeah. seeing us as equal citizens, you know? And I think that a real part of it is just, you know, this continuing reluctance to acknowledge that the United States is no longer, if it ever has been, a white country. I mean, there are a lot of brown people in the country and we're transitioning toward becoming a brown country more and more. And I think we have to wake up to that reality and understand it.
Do you know that year they said by like 2030 or 20 something, like it's going to be like predominantly like Latin in America
yeah.
because, you know, so it, yeah, very true. Very, very, very true.
And I think already, I mean, in 2013 or 2014, that was the first year when, you know, there were more non-white babies born than white babies in the United States. And there are many major metropolises that are already majority minority communities.
Now, I have a series of questions about like voting and elections and, yeah. and how all of that stuff works. But before I get there, there's one question I do want to ask. With all of, maybe I just have not done the research. Why do Latin leaders allow white leaders to continue with the narrative that they're stealing our jobs? When we know damn well, they are not stealing your damn job. If you're finding them, like I live in Palm Springs. If I go on the left side of Home Depot and I need some construction done, I know, you know what I mean? That's sad. And these are the jobs who they're like, please give me a job. I have kids to feed. You know what I mean? I have family members that need medicine. So like, why do they allow this narrative? It bugs me. I'm like, please stop lying on these people.
Yeah, no, they're not taking anybody's jobs. I mean, they're, as you know, Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico in 2006, got into some hot water for saying that, you know, Mexicans do jobs in the United States that not even African Americans will do. You know, and there's some truth to that. He got in trouble for it, but there's some truth to that.
Very fact.
You know, I think Americans have come to rely on this steady supply of cheap labor because that's how we get apples that cost 75 cents instead of $2. It's how we get t-shirts at Walmart that cost $5 instead of, you know, $15.
Let's talk about the food.
Let's talk about
the tobacco and how they like working in like you could die literally because of the heat just being trapped under there. And we don't talk about all of it. So it's just. I guess for me, and maybe just because I don't know, mm-hmm. I would just feel like if I didn't know there was such representation. And I go, if you have such great representation, like, why aren't you doing a little bit more? I guess we can say the same thing for the Black Caucus.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah, there are real questions about what have our political leaders gotten for us, for sure. What have they done for us? We've asked questions about whether or not they become corrupted once they enter the world of politics, all those things. But I think fundamentally the problem is that there's an unwillingness to see and wrestle with our own complicity in this system. You know, I mean, the fact that we rely on immigrant labor, but don't acknowledge it. I mean, all the restaurants we go to, if you peek behind the into the kitchen, I mean, the food's being prepared by immigrant workers. I mean,
that part,
it's there.
Even at the Asian restaurants, girl, that's the gag. That door swings open and you go, like even that, like that's the gag. And it's true. Like America truly is like somebody always has to be on the bottom for America to work because it's a business and not a country. And we all knew that. Now, here we go. These are the questions that, because I feel that, you know, high school was a long time ago for a lot of folks. And then for the young ones that's in there, you on your cell phone and you're not paying attention. So now, Geraldo got his PhD from Yale. Okay, you know, that was very expensive, from Yale in 2008. Okay, he said, what? I read a few books on my lunch break. Now I'm sitting real fat eating big steaks. Okay, here we go.
You know that you're setting me up for failure right here, because just because I have a PhD doesn't mean I know a damn thing about anything. But,
you know, I love you were at least honest. Okay. He goes, I might not know a whole lot, but I know that this debt is real and we need it to go away. No, here we go. Okay. So first question, how does voting work? Like, that's my first question.
Yeah. I mean, voting works by, you know, elections are held on Tuesday. There are a lot of questions about why it's held on a weekday when people are at work instead of a weekend. There are a lot of questions about why we don't have compulsory, mandatory voting like many other countries do. But here in the United States, go ahead.
That compulsory? Did you say
compulsory?
That?
Yeah, there's my PhD talking, right?
See, compulsory. That's a vocabulary.
No, compulsory voting is it's mandatory. You have to vote. There's 100% voting rate. We know that, you know, in the United States, only, you know, 60% of Americans who are eligible to vote participate in elections. So that's a comparatively low voting rate. You know,
that is very true. I do remember watching a documentary, the guy who did the 9/11 one, whatever his name is, it's called Where Are They?
Are you talking about Michael Moore?
Michael Moore, yeah. And he has one called Where to Invade Next, where he goes around to all of these countries, Italy, Rome, Finland, da-da-da-da-da. And they're all succeeding off of American principles. And I believe it was somewhere up by Greenland or somewhere, Iceland up there somewhere.
Yeah. Newfoundland or something?
Something like that, right? Something where the prison is like here, and the rest of the city is like across the lake, and there's no like no security guards with like guns and da-da-da-da-da. Like they're even able to swim up to a point. You know what I mean? Like murderers and like common criminals are in the same, and like they let them cook with like sharp knives. I mean, you would never see that. Right? The thing is, I bring that up to say, like, they, when it's time to vote on issues, they actually go to the jail to make sure that those inmates get to vote as well. Because for me, in America, it makes no sense that you can't vote, but Uncle Sam wants your money, though, once you get out. And then makes it even harder for you to get a job once you get out. So that whole thing about, say that word again.
Oh, compulsory voting.
Okay, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, that's
compulsory
right.
Mandatory voting. Okay, mandatory. Okay, now here we go. What is the Electoral College and what is the popular vote?
Let me say one more quick thing about voting. Yes. One thing I think that's always important to keep in mind is that there's actually no constitutionally guaranteed right to vote. So I think a lot of us spend time thinking about how, like, oh, you turn 18, you're a citizen, you haven't committed a crime, you vote. I think we think that because of like motor voter laws or all of these things that automatically register us. But there is no constitutionally guaranteed right to vote. All there is are constitutional amendments that say what classes of voters you're not allowed to disqualify from voting. So, you know, after the Civil War, there was a 15th Amendment that said you can't bar someone from voting based on their race. We know that women couldn't vote until 1920. That took another constitutional amendment in 1920 to say that you couldn't deny someone the right to vote because they're a woman. So over time, Congress has passed amendments to say who you couldn't deny the vote to, but that's different than saying everyone has a universal right to vote.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to remember because, you know, that's how we continue to exclude certain people from voting. That's why there's no such thing as universal voting and not everyone who's 18 and a citizen has the right to vote.
Yeah, which makes sense because then if it's not mandatory, then one, lack of education and lack of resources. And we know that voter suppression is real. So that means that power gets to stay in the hands of people that it's always been in. That makes complete sense. I look, okay, so we're going to learn. I'm learning things.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here we go.
That's
next
right.
question.
Okay,
so what is the Electoral College? And then after that, what is the popular vote?
Yeah. So I think it's always interesting to know, too, that when we go out and vote in November, it's not actually our vote that determines the election. You know, it's not the national popular vote that determines the election. It's not even the popular vote in the state that determines the election. What all the vote does, all that our vote does is then gives the authority to a group of electors to go cast their votes for the person that we vote for. So the number of electors is always determined based on the number of congressmen from a particular state plus the number of senators. So it's however many congressmen there are plus two, because that's the number of senators. And it's that number of electors that goes to DC to ratify the results of the election in November. So all we're doing with the popular vote is telling electors what our voting preferences are. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, all states, this is the other thing that's kind of confusing about elections. It's election law is really determined at the state level. It's not determined by the federal government. And states can go about how they appoint electors in different ways, whether it's the state legislature. And I think, you know, we see this coming up right now. One thing I think that's fascinating about all elections, but this election in particular, it's like a mini civics lesson right before us, you know, because all of a sudden we're paying attention to how the state of Pennsylvania delegates its electors. These are things that we like never, ever paid attention to before because we just took for granted that it would work smoothly as it always has. But it's only when there's like a disruption to that system that we start paying attention to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all we're doing when we vote in a national election is, you know, letting the electors from a particular state, the state that we vote in, know what our voting preference is. And then they go cast their electoral college votes for, hopefully, the president that we voted for in the state.
Now, real quick, before you answer, I think you answered popular vote, but a lot of people say that the electoral college is flawed because of said reason. So explain to us, like, if the electoral college, would it be more beneficial if the electoral college was, like, not there? Like, are they really doing us a service? Are they really? Because the other question is, like, do we really know if they, like, are taking our votes? You know, like, is this real? Like, could we have been blue and then they made us red or vice versa? You know, so, like.
Yeah, I mean, it varies from state to state. So, you know, in some states, electors are bound to, like, by law, they have to cast their electoral vote for the candidate that won the election in that state. But others have more autonomy than that. I think in practice, it hasn't happened. I mean, it would be a really bad look for an elector to go against the popular will of the people in your state. That would be a bad look. To your point that the Electoral College has all kinds of problems, I mean, it has been challenged ever since it was created. And there have been like 900 attempts over the past couple hundred years to do away with the Electoral College, because in a lot of ways, it doesn't make sense. And interestingly, you know, it was actually like so many things in American history, about protecting the rights of slave owners in the 19th century. That's the function the Electoral College served, because it had to do with representation. We all know that slaves were counted as 3/5 of a person. And right. So the number of electors depended on the number of people in a state. And if you were counting slaves as 3/5 of a person, that, you know, diminished their representation.
Right.
So, you know, but over time, I think now it's kind of widely understood that the Electoral College benefits Republicans almost exclusively, because states with low populations still have electoral votes, and basically they have two, let me start that over. Basically, you know, one thing I read is that sometime in the near future, 40% of all Americans are going to live in 5 states. And the number of electors in those 5 states is going to be static.
Girl, and I have 4.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, the point is that states with smaller populations are overrepresented. They have more power than the states with the greatest number of people, because the number of electors is static. That's mm-hmm. not changing. That's not going up as there is a bigger population, you know? So that means that the smaller states are still going to have the same number of electors, even as they lose population. So the problem, as many people see it, is that we have a system that prioritizes land and all of the states instead of the number of people living in those states. So it doesn't feel like there's true democratic representation. And I think all you have to do is look at the fact that a Republican has only won one popular vote in the 21st century, you know, and this year Joe Biden won by more than 5 million votes, but, you know, and we know that Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes in 2016. But the idea that you can still have a president in office, even though they lost the popular vote, just strikes many as so wrong.
So trash, too, in the way he's going about it. Okay, now here we go. Yeah. How does the local government work? Because I feel like a lot of times, one, most people don't know what's going on. And we can even say this, like when you get your ballot, it's like who the presidents are. We saw Trump. We saw Kanye. I was really tempted. I'm not going to lie. I was tempted. I was like, how can I vote for like Kamala and then Kanye? You know, because I just didn't, you know, Biden, I was a little iffy too. But Kamala, I was like, boom, you know? So you have the presidents or the presidency, but then you have all of these other people in all of these other positions that are just as vital. So, like, how does local government work? Because it affects, I think local government, I think local government affects you faster and quicker, but then you also can see the most change in local government than you can, I guess, federally or nationally or something like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's a cliche, but, you know, you'll hear people say all politics is local. And I think there's some real truth to that. You know, I think one of the things about local politics, too, I think, you know, if there's a plea that I have, it would be that we all kind of invest more in thinking about local politics, learning about local politics. I mean, I just voted in Chicago and I had like an eight page ballot, you know, with all of these candidates for the, you know, the local water commissioner and all of these judges I've never heard anything about. But, you know, in a real way, they're going to determine what the quality of my life is like in my city much right. more than the presidents will. And, you know, I think another reason to invest in local politics is that, you know, politics is like hopelessly divided at this point. I mean, Americans don't even talk to one another. We don't even know who each other are, and we live in different worlds. But I think there's a possibility, at least, that you can have more conversations at the local mm-hmm. level and talk to people who you might not necessarily agree with. If you encounter them out on the street or at a town hall or at some sort of community gathering, you know, so I think it would be important to really invest in local politics and local communities. I mean, yeah, that would be my plea, I think.
Done. One, like a few, just two more, really
sure.
one more. Here we go.
Go for it.
We know the term voter suppression. But what does that look like? Like, what does that physically look like? So, because I think a lot of people may not recognize that they might, you know, be affected by it. So what does that like tangibly look like?
Well, it's related to this thing we were talking about a few minutes ago, which is this idea that there's no constitutionally guaranteed right to vote and there's no, you know, universal right to vote. Because, you know, we assume that laws like the 1965 Voting Rights Act did away with all kinds of voter suppression. But, you know, specific state legislatures, again, because election law is really left to individual states, certain states have tried to, you know, push the boundaries of federal law and circumvent federal law in all kinds of ways. And so, you know, the law again says you can't discriminate based on race, or you can't discriminate based on someone's sex or gender. And so, you know, we think that means full voting equality, but what it really means is that states have still tried to come up with other ways to lower voter participation. You know, some ways that we've seen that happening is, you know, voter ID laws, and that, you know, you need to present some form of federal identification, government-issued identification in order to vote. Well, not everyone can do that. It costs money. Sometimes people, you know, don't have the expendable income to go afford federal government-issued identification. Another way we've seen it happen is that, like in Texas, you know, the governor this year tried to put just one official ballot drop box per county, but Texas counties are wildly diverse. You know, there's Harris County, but then, which is where Houston is, but then there are these rural counties that are like 200, 300 square miles big, and it would require someone driving for hours to drop off their ballots. And so I think what voting suppression mostly means now is raising bars for people who could be eligible to vote, but making it very difficult for them to participate. And we know that we're all busy. We have a million things to think about. I mean, again, I mentioned I voted in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. It took me like a good hour to figure out how to even complete my ballot, you know? And so it requires a real investment here to try to vote. And I just don't think that voting should be so hard if what you want from us is political participation. And it makes you wonder if they actually want us to participate.
Right. Well, that part. Okay. Which we know they don't. Can we just get all these old trolls out of office? You know, I'm praying that maybe I shouldn't pray that anymore, but I just pray God get the wicked. So I was just praying that COVID would just slap everybody. You know, that was wicked. And if you just, you know, and what was it in Exodus, girl, you know, when death came, girl, just knocked everybody out. You was just dead. Oops, so sorry. You know, now we can just elect somebody else. Here we go. Last two, but in one. Mm-hmm. What are the, like, here we go. We know the names of the three branches of government, but what do they do? And then to close it all out, why do you think so many people don't know these things or like care to know? Because the reality is, in today's society, we're very vocal. We'll be online, cha-da-da-da-da, why is this, I can't stand this, da-da-da-da-da. But when it's time to actually go and do something and be a change, outside of this year where we saw this extreme voting, most hoes is like, no, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. So what are those, how do those three branches of government, I'm just going to say this, what does the legislative, judicial, and executive branches, like what are their functions and how do they affect us?
Yeah. It's amazing, too. I don't know if you saw this story, but the newly elected senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, the former coach of the Alabama football team, he was talking about the three branches of government being the House, the Senate, and I don't even know what else he said. You know, he said it was the House and the Senate, and they're together in the legislative branch. And this is an elected senator, you know, so we would hope for better from our
now. Can I ask
leaders.
One question? Because sure. We generally know that these people of elected positions, outside of a few, the dark ones, have generally been given these seats because of connections. Was this individual? Because I just want to know, like, did you read the book? Because for you to get up there in 2020 and make an ass of yourself when you got Google on your cell phone, boo boo.
Yeah.
So
well. I mean, think of it this way. Every single immigrant who naturalizes has to pass a citizenship where they have to answer all kinds of questions about American civics and how government works. And if they answered the three branches of government were the House and the Senate and whatever the third was, there's no way they would become citizens. But here we have this man from Alabama getting elected. And, you know, part of the problem is that there's, well, I don't know if it's a problem or not, but it's just a fact of American life that there is no kind of test required where you have to demonstrate some basic knowledge about American government in order to get elected. I mean, the only requirement for a president is what is it, 36 something? You have to be
a citizen. Uh-huh,
yeah, you have to be a citizen. You have to be 36 years old. But there are a lot of 36-year-olds who are citizens who should not be president. But that's the only rule, you know? So I think, you know, him in particular, I don't know much about him, but I just know he was a college football coach. And I know that there's a history in the country of, you know, kind of voting for popular figures in a particular area, whether they don't know, you know, anything about government. I mean, we have a president for the past few years has been the host of The Apprentice, and that's their qualification. And look, I love you, Monique, but you probably think you shouldn't be president, right? I don't know.
I mean, you know, when it comes to celebrities, you know, maybe you should just stay on television. You know, yeah. I think he was good about making, you know, you're fired. That was his best thing.
Right.
And he should have stayed there.
Yeah. Okay, so there are three branches of government: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. And the legislative branch is composed of the House and the Senate together, and they make laws. And then the judicial branch is the, you know, various levels of justices. And so there's the Supreme Court, there's district courts. The United States is divided into a fair number of districts, and they have jurisdiction over, they're regional. So it's like the Western District happens to be the Ninth District, and that pulls together California and other Western states. And then there's the appellate court. That's the kind of next highest level after the appeals court.
Oh, maybe appeals, but I was like, yeah.
That's the appellate court. And then after the appellate court, there is the Supreme Court. And so, you know, if someone brings a case, it usually climbs up the ladder from the district court to the appeals court to the Supreme Court. And then finally, there's the executive branch, and that's the president, that's the White House. And the idea for these three branches of government is that they will each have kind of checks and balances on the other. The president, you know, you have to remember that our government was formed in the context of a revolution against the monarchy and a king of England. And so, you know, they didn't want to give the president all of the power. They didn't want the president of the United States to be a king. So our system of government, the three branches of government, have always served as checks and balances on one another. Yeah. I think we've seen that break down a little bit in the past few years when, you know, I mean, obviously in the Trump era, you know, Trump has tried to expand his executive authority in all kinds of ways and intervene in the judicial and legislative process in a way that might not be illegal, but certainly goes against the system of checks and balances and breaks all of the norms that we've lived by for a long time.
I think the thing that just rubbed me the wrong way, even when you just said that, which was, it might not be illegal. Like, it's not illegal, which I feel is always how people in power, people in just these places of power always get to move. It's like, it's not illegal, but, you know, I can find a loophole to fuck you somehow. I mean,
doesn't make it right.
Yeah. It's just trash. Okay. Well, you answered all of my questions. I feel so much smarter. What's that word? Appellate? Because I was like, appellate?
The appellate court. Yeah, the appeals court.
Said,
that's right.
Who is them? I said pellets. What is that, pigeon poop? First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. Like, I totally want to bring you back and just ask more questions, specifically about just Latin issues, history.
Let's do it.
Like,
yeah.
Lovely. Okay.
Thank you. And hey, congratulations on your podcast. It's really exciting.
You.
And I hope it goes well for you. And I'm around.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Okay.
Ellie. Girl, now it's your turn. All right, y'all. Now, this segment of the show is called Phone a Friend, where each week I will ask you all questions And I want to hear how you feel, what you think, and how you get down about the situation, okay? So I went on Twitter this week and I asked some of my Twitter honeys their opinion on some of the most epic, most talented, genius performances. Okay, so here we go. Tell me what y'all think. The Cheetah Girls or 3LW? 3LW versus 702. 702 versus Black. Destiny's Child versus DC3. And last but not least, Missy Elliott versus Quincy Jones. I would love your responses to those questions, and then just tell me your most epic artist of all time. But who do you think, especially Destiny's Child versus DC3? Now let's listen to some of the callers.
Hi, I'm Erin from Los Angeles, and I'm sorry, but 3LW is so much better than 702, simply because I don't know if there's anything better than Keeley Williams. I'm getting a little tired of your broken promises, Thomases. She's never made a list. No one has ever made a list sound better.
Erin, very factual girl. That's one of the main reasons why I love her. I'm thinking, daddy, the promise, the promise. What is she doing, girl? Nothing, because she shaded the girl, the dark-skinned girl, and that's why God got her. Karma's a bitch. Oh, we got one more. Let's see.
Hi, I'm Natalie, and I'm from Miami, Florida, and I think 3LW is better than 702 because I lived for the drama.
And the drama was the one with the lift didn't like Notori, who is killing it on Power. If you don't know what Power is, please get into it, girl. Okay, and she also did a phenomenal job as Little Kim in that biopic. However, Little Kim has, you know, colorism issues, and that's why she didn't like it. Anyway, but it was amazing. And then Adriana, she just sat there, like, quiet, and then let the Lisp girl just bully her shade. So didn't Notori bring it up when she was on The Real, which is real, like 10 toes down, which is ballsy, girl, but you know, she got a check, so she's secure, so she can do that. But I did love that Adrian, you know, apologized. I mean, look, here you go. Forgiveness helps at any point. It really sucks that it took all of this time for her to say those words publicly or to come to her aid. But we see that God had Notori. He had a plan, and she's been working. She's never stopped working. Girlfriend's killing it. So what's for you is for you, children. Okay, because it's about damn time.
Hey, my name is Yvette. I'm from Portland. I think Quincy Jones is actually in a league of his own in comparison to Missy Elliott. I mean, he was definitely a part of the generation of artists who laid the groundwork for her and others like her to be expressive and creative. But I don't know. He was also one of the first people to advocate for rap when others weren't having it, like the gatekeepers of music, I guess. But how are you going to argue with somebody who studied composition in France? Come on.
There's no argument with that there. You know, can we say this? Do y'all remember in the Ray Charles movie when Quincy Jones came up to Ray Charles? Like a little nobody, and was like, "Hey, Ray, da, 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 da." They need to do a Quincy Jones film. Like that needs to really happen.
My name is Christine. I'm from Austin, Texas, and Destiny's Child is better than SWV because they birthed Beyonce. I mean, need I say more? Thank you.
I mean, wait a minute. Now. Because when I think of Coco, who is a singer, okay, because Coco was the lead singer in SWV. SWV is from, like, SWV is like Ariana Grande. Like, honey, I just say, okay, that's all I do, okay? Da 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 da. Okay, right? Beyonce, even though SWV was after Janet Jackson, it's just different, you know what I mean? Like, white people want you to do a little bit more on stage than just think, well, not true, because Ariana Grande is doing it. I don't know. I'm torn. This is why I'm truly torn, because SWB was three chocolate girls, and Coco was the darkest, okay? So, like, Kelly Rowland had to go overseas to become a superstar. Truth, facts is facts. So, I mean, you know, I mean, yes. Okay. I mean, here you go. What we can say is that Beyonce had, you know, she did her Destiny's Child, then she did DC3, then she had five top singles on Dangerously in Love, and she's been a beast ever since. And so we got to give credit where credit is due. Well, here you go. Did we have anybody light-skinned that was killing it? Like Faith Evans, she was a singer, so she didn't do anything. Kiki Wyatt, like, can out-sing Beyonce and everybody. Yeah, I guess none of the girls were really, really, like, doing that. Because here you go. I think even if we think about, like, white singers, I mean, you had Paula, but she was, like, 80s, right? And then I think we had Madonna, who was, like, Madonna can do choreography, right? So I guess Madonna. Britney, but Destiny's Child was already a thing. So, because if Beyonce was going to compete against Britney, she had to do everything that she did. Like, she would have not had a career if she didn't. So, okay, there we go. Case closed. But tell me, who do y'all think is Destiny's Child or DC3 better? tell me. Well, family, this is so much fun. Please call it. I love hearing from y'all, okay? We're going to have some questions. We've got some juicy ones, okay? This is just the beginning. We're very, very excited, girl. Like, I'm grinning from ear to ear, and I cannot wait. I'm so thankful. Thankful for all of my producers, my sound techs, my managers. Girl, this is the beginning, and it's about damn time, and we're closing out on that. See you next time. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.